And everyone who made today, Sequoina, our hats off to you, and all the producers, all the engineers and volunteers. We want to thank everyone. We're going to be rejoining our regularly scheduled broadcast right after this musical presentation. And on behalf of myself, Elizabeth Perry,
and Armando Gonzalez,
thank you for staying and being a part of this 31st tribute to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
This is Mike Crenshaw.
And Monica Beamer.
We are KBOO station co-managers. We wanted to say thank you to all of our members for helping KBOO to exceed our goals in December. We appreciate everyone's generosity and commitment to KBOO, and we can't do all that we do without you.
We wanted to thank you for helping us to meet our $10,000 one-to-one match for new and increasing donations in November and December. We met our goal. And thank you to all the generous foundations and donors who created the match that encouraged new membership.
We have a lot more to do in 2016, and we can't do it without our members, our volunteers, and our whole community.
Thanks for keeping KBOO strong.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Hey, hey, ho, ho. Welcome to KBOO's Labor Radio Collective Hour. We're so glad you can join us today on MLK Jr. and his birthday. We're happy to have you here. Welcome. If you're at work, we're glad you can listen and tune in. If you're on your way home, we hope you had a great day. My name is Stephanie Patricio. I will be hosting tonight, and we are joined by Diana Peiwu, the executive director of Jobs with Justice here in Portland. We're going to be delving in a little into the work that J with J has done, what they hope to accomplish in the future, and some background information. Diana, are you here with me?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Good evening, Stephanie.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, just relaxing after a very busy day.
That's good. It's always good when we can relax a little bit. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. So why don't we start out a little bit first with some background info. Where do you come from? We know that you're new to the executive director role, so maybe you can talk a little bit about your work that you did before stepping into that role, and then kind of some background info for folks that might not be familiar with J with J, Jobs with Justice, and the work that they do here in Portland.
Thanks. So Portland Jobs with Justice is turning 25 this year, and we are a coalition of over 110 organizations, including unions, faith institutions, community organizations, and student groups working for workers' rights and economic justice. And especially this year, I think we're really taking on both the question and the action of what it looks like to center a racial justice analysis when we're doing workers' rights and economic justice work. So that's really exciting. My background really comes from a lot of racial justice organizing, both around environmental issues, around indigenous sovereignty, but working with people of color, organizations all over the United States, including a lot of youth organizations and youth organizers, to build movements. And that includes direct action. It includes a lot of sort of locally based organizing projects that include policy change, but actually really go beyond policy change. So people who are targeting landlords and corporations directly to get what they need. It's really fun work.
Right on. That's great. And you said the here locally, J with J is 25 years old. Is that correct?
Yeah, we turned 25 this year in 2016.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Thanks.
Can you talk a little bit about the founding of J with J here, or the info that you do are familiar with, and how that started here in Portland?
Yeah, you know, Portland Jobs with Justice started in the early 90s, and I think it was really, from what I understand, you know, the founders included people like Margaret Butler and Jamie Partridge, Lori King, Greg Margolis, Peter Clark, a lot of people that I think people consider sort of fixtures in Portland Jobs with Justice. And the goal and the idea of Portland Jobs with Justice at the time was to provide a more left and more radical organization to complement what already existed in the local labor movement. So everything from, you know, the labor unions themselves at the time, and also larger organizations like the labor councils or the AFL-CIO, so regional and statewide organizations. I think, you know, some of our founders thought that those organizations weren't radical enough. I think now we talk about having different kinds of organizations and analyses that complement each other in our sort of landscape or movement ecosystem.
Brad, that's great. That's good to know. Awesome. Well, what is some of the work that J with J is doing now? We know that I think it's always important to historicize or place the work that labor is doing or labor advocates are doing in the moment in time, right? So we know, for example, today there's a group of Black queers that shut down the Bay Bridge, right? Saying that Black health mattered. So these things are happening and folks are advocating for health, right? And we know workers are doing the same thing. We had folks shut down various airports around the nation today, right? But locating that work in the time and the moment that's going on right now, right? We know a lot of Black Lives Matter movement is at the forefront of organizing, not just labor organizing, but also like community and in other spheres. So what is the work that J with J is doing right now?
Thanks. Actually, we just went through a strategic planning session. And so my entire board and staff and a significant number of our community partners are down with this. You know, Grace Lee Boggs loves to ask this question, what time is it in the clock of the world, right? Mm. And so that's the question that we attempted to answer in the first weekend of January. And what we came up with was, we know that the minimum wage is going to change in Oregon this year. We know that in Portland, people need more than $15 to get by, and even 15 is not enough, right? Everyone will say that, from the folks that the big unions like SEIU and AFSCME to all of those sort of smaller unions and community people everywhere, right? The students, my friends, low-wage workers, people who work at Target. So we have what's called the Portland Area Campaign for 15, and that is a collaborative effort of unions and Jobs with Justice and 15 Now to raise wages for low-wage workers in the Portland area up to $15 an hour. In 2015, 15,000 workers in the Portland area got their wages raised to $15 an hour just through union organizing. 15,000 workers. And we're set to double that number again. So we would have 30,000 workers getting $15 an hour minimum in Portland by 2017. And so that's really exciting. And it's a collaboration with folks like SEIU Home Care, 5-15, the folks at the airport that you were talking about today, the laborers, 483, who are represented by in Parks and Rec, who got several hundred workers reclassified from casual temporary labor into the pool that's represented by the union, which is, you know, a fantastic win for everybody. And I'm trying to remember who else. Oh, and then AFSCME, right, the folks at PSU and the Aramark. And so we're about to launch, very exciting, a campaign for PSU to pay all of its workers 15. And that includes, you know, all of the different sectors on campus, graduate students, adjunct professors, students, student workers. The professors are already behind this. They're really excited about it. And then, you know, we have other low-wage workers in other sectors, other unions, who are also looking forward to being able to get $15 an hour as a minimum.
Yeah, that's... That sounds like exciting work. And, you know, I wasn't aware that the 15,000 workers had gotten their wages raised in you're saying in Oregon or in Portland?
Just in Portland.
Wow.
You know, a significant portion of that is really that a group that came in under SEIU 503. And, you know, it's close to a dozen other sort of locals or sort of shops. Contracts that are fighting for 15 or that have won 15.
Sure. So maybe we can take a moment, because I know you had mentioned that part of the work now is to double that, right? Is to go to 30,000 workers that are making $15 an hour. You mentioned briefly that that wasn't enough. I think it's important to take a moment and envision what that means, right? So why organize for $15 an hour? What does that mean? What does that mean for a worker who's out there making minimum wage?
Sure. The difference between $9.25 and $15 an hour, right, is $5.75 an hour. And so we know that there's scheduling issues. We know that there's, you know, if folks are getting benefits, but there's a whole package of wins and that actually ensure that low-wage workers can have access to good lives and stable income that helps folks sort of, you know, achieve their life goals and provide for their families. At the same time, the wage is a minimum, wages and housing really set the conditions of your life, right? Most of us pay between one-third and two-thirds of our income to our housing costs, whether that's a mortgage or rent. And so depending on your income and depending on your rent. But as rent increases in Portland, we have the fastest increasing rents in the nation for a metro area. The importance of raising the minimum wage becomes even more important. We already know that there are families, especially immigrant families, refugee families, families of color, low-wage families, who are being pushed out further and further. So families who grew up in North Portland, families who grew up in Northeast Portland, families who grew up in Cully, right, are being pushed out to Gresham and beyond, right, whether it's out to Gresham or further south, out past Beaverton. And what that means for our community here in Portland is, like many other cities, the possibility that we'll just become a playground for the rich, or in our case, the playground for either the rich or the hipsters, right? Mm-hmm. Which, regardless of income, have access to different kinds of resources and really treat the city as a playground. And what that means is it becomes unfriendly for families. It becomes unfriendly for single parents. It becomes unfriendly for all of the folks who make the city work and run. And also, because we worked with the iron workers a lot this year, for the people who build the buildings, who lay the foundations, who lay the iron structures that actually create the buildings of the city. These are the people who actually build our cities, are being pushed out further and further and not able to stay in the places that they actually contribute the infrastructure to.
How ironic.
And it's ironic, it's unfair. These men and women work extremely hard under, you know, very intense conditions, often intense physical labor, but also they're often out in the elements. And so if everyone deserves a living wage and some good security, but all of the sort of buildings that Portland Development Commission is so proud of for building, these are the people who actually built them, the folks in the building trade, whether it's folks who got trained through Oregon Tradeswomen or the folks in the building trade locally or at the statewide level.
That's great. That's great. I had a question. You mentioned immigrant families and single parents as a part of the folks that are being pushed out. So I wonder, you know, one of the biggest critiques within or of the labor movement is its inability to engage communities of color or marginalized folks for that matter. You know, you can talk about white queer folks, right? But marginalized folks. So in what way does J with J take that in or grapple with that? Like what is the analysis that J with J has around that, right? Around engaging folks of color and building and organizing.
Thanks. I think what's really exciting about sort of Portland Jobs with Justice 2.0 is that we are actively grappling and working with questions of racial justice and economic justice. And so, you know, we've really taken it head on to start the conversation with the people who are doing the work, right? The Coalition of Black Trade Unionists and Urban League, to start those conversations about what does Black Lives Matter mean for the labor movement? What could it mean for the labor movement, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's a certain amount of and we're really good at this in Oregon, right, of saying we care.
Right.
We care about this thing, and then the question becomes, you know, the really important and deep question becomes, what are we actually going to do differently, right? And so if we're really grappling with Black Lives Matter, with issues of police accountability, but also just sort of well-being, right, the structural reasons why certain neighborhoods are over-policed, then that becomes a different question. And so in our collaboration with the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists and Urban League, what we've come up with is the ways that Black Lives Matter for the labor movement means minimum wage. It means lifting up local campaigns, the demands of families who have lost lives to the police. This is not to, you know, target anybody. But the important part is that these are people who are suffering deeply. Their family members have been lost, right, through some malfeasance. And so working with local worker organizations, right, to lift up those demands, a lot of them are just really asking for a formal inquiry, and that seems completely reasonable and fair. And we're working on this. This is work in progress. We're working on developing, like, what does a Black Lives Matter resolution that has a little bit more traction and grounding, what does that look like, you know, for union locals? And so that's the process. The conversation and the negotiation is the process, is the win, is the thing. And so, for instance, at Southerners on New Ground, you know, LGBTQ organization centered in the South, they ask the question of everyone who comes into their organization. They say, are you willing to be transformed in the service of the work? Are you willing to be transformed in the service of the work? And so here with this Black Lives Matter movement, it's like, are we willing to be individually transformed in the service of the work, but are we also willing to transform our organizations and movements in the service of the work?
Yeah, and I think that's such a loaded question, right? But what is that? So what does that mean when we, what does that mean to you?
Transformation?
Yeah, transformation in the context of organizing.
Yeah.
And labor organizing, or I guess organizing in general.
Sure. I think,
there's so many places you could go with that.
I know, there's a lot of stuff going on there. I think one of the questions, you know, Grace Lee Boggs, who is a fantastic sort of theorist around in Detroit, comes up through...
And Grace Lee Boggs did organizing, right? Just as
Grace Lee Boggs organized in Detroit, was married to James Boggs, who is a very important Black labor leader and theorist. And I think Grace Lee Boggs talked about Martin Luther King, right? Today is King Day. That it makes sense that King was a movement activist for only 13 years, right, from his participation, starting with the Montgomery bus boycott to his assassination in April of 1968. And in that time, we see a development of his thinking, of his theory, of his analysis, but also of his actions. We see that he himself transformed himself in response to the conditions that Black people face, right, in the U.S. South in the time. And so by the time of his death, folks are talking about this all day, right? He was actively challenging militarism, capitalism, and racism. And we talk about the moral arc of history bending towards justice, right? This, it's a very deeply hopeful view. But he called for programs that would involve young people in self-transforming and structure-transforming direct actions. And so... self-transformation means doing the internal work. One of his six steps of nonviolent social change, you know, we talk about research and information gathering, talks about education and outreach. The third one is personal commitment. This is a daily check-in and affirm your faith in the philosophy and methods that you're using to change the world, to eliminate hidden motives and prepare yourself to accept suffering, if necessary, in your work for justice. And so what he's talking about in these steps of nonviolent social change is a deeply moral and spiritual or personal commitment, right? Yeah. Both to nonviolence as well as to your people or your community. And so that self-transformation, that this is eliminating hidden motives, doing internal work, preparing yourself to accept suffering if necessary in service of the work, for justice and a daily renewal and a daily commitment, right, to our shared work, our shared values, and our shared actions.
Mm-hmm. And,
we believe that leads to structural transformation. So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to ask, and that would be under the assumption that the power or the work that one does to internally then is somehow reflected back out, right? It's mm-hmm. under the assumption of that, but I think you touched
yeah.
on that.
And one of the things I'll say about racial justice, the basic tenet of folks of color doing racial justice work, is it is actually important who you hire, right? And it's important not to just simply tokenize someone, to hire them on as window dressing, right? But that if your organization is taking that step to enter into this transformation, in addition to your daily spiritual practice or personal practice, the organization has to be prepared to enter into a similar kind of self-reflection and transformation in the service of the work, in the service of racial justice. Honestly, what it's meant is that by hiring people of color more recently into jobs with justice, what we're able to see is that new relationships are being able to be built, relationships that have been sort of very tense or estranged or, you know, mutually, or that our organization maybe in the past has been viewed with some question or suspicion, rightfully so, if your staff doesn't reflect your values, then... You know, with the changes of who we have become, who we're able to work with actually shifts, and that is a beautiful, exciting thing, right? Our core historic membership is still right there with us, super strong, really brilliant and loving and present, and we've been able to bring on new members and new coalition affiliates, and that's just so exciting to see the growth and then to see this sort of, I think. Transformation of who we are, and then what that means for what we will become, and also what we're going to win together. That's always, you know, super exciting.
Yeah, and I think well, in that vein of transformation, and you mentioned Dr. King just a couple minutes ago. What does that look like practically or materially for Day with Jay and like the everyday, like for the work that you hope to do in the future?
That's a really good question. I think we talked about the Portland Area Campaign for 15.
Yeah.
We talked about our work with the Black Lives Matter movement. And I think something else that's new that we're going to embark upon with more intention and more resources this year is leadership development. We are building out some great work with students that is centered on Black students and Black student unions. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do is... And what we are doing is building the consensus and building the base and building a shared vision so that people can do the work together around leadership development and really, you know, even the success of nonviolent social change, but all of the strategic training, the sort of when we talk about the spectrum of values, these other tools for analysis as well as for strategy that are so important both for old seasoned organizers as well as for brand new organizers or for folks who are activists but who are looking to become more effective. And so really putting resources and time into building out, right, those kinds of workshops is and trainings as well as the mentorship capacity is really important. We have organizing interns at our organization now, you know, students who are coming to both see what it looks like to work in a nonprofit as well as to learn, you know, campaigning skills and organizing skills. We're trying to get folks out on the doors and all of the sort of most important things that people need to do to learn to organize.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. Well, we thank you for your time. The Labor Collective is super excited to work with Jay with Jay and then see the new organizing that comes out, not only in the Fight for 15, but as we take moments and time to reflect on everything, all the kind of organizing that's happening throughout the nation. So I thank you for your time, Diana, and yeah, see you out in the streets.
Thank you so much. And I'll just end with, you know, we talked about coalition building today as a beloved community. And just to end with a quote from Cornel West, justice is what love looks like in public. right? And so that means both inside our organizations as well as in the work that we do outside in the world. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Diana. We're thankful that you could join us today. The Labor Collective would really ask folks to take time today and reflect on not only Dr. King's work, but also the work that is being put out by marginalized folks throughout the nation today. We saw very different civil disobedience, and we hope that you can take time outside of work or even in work, to start those conversations with your coworkers, with your loved ones, but to take time to reflect on what that transformation for yourself and for your community looks like. So we thank you for your time, and happy MLK Day.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the film screening of Warrior, The Life of Leonard Peltier, Saturday, February 6th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Warrior tells the true story of Leonard Peltier, the American Indian leader locked away for life in Leavenworth Penitentiary. Warrior takes us back to the violent confrontations at Pine Ridge and Wounded Knee in the 70s, and through Peltier's harrowing odyssey through the American justice system. Leonard's son, Chauncey Peltier, will hold a Q&A after the film. Again, that's Warrior, The Life of Leonard Peltier, Saturday, February 6th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On Monday, February 15th at 6:30 p.m., Prison Pipeline will air a Valentine's Day special to bring to light the fact that, because of incarceration, many people are separated from their friends, family, and lovers on Valentine's Day. We will be reading your short messages to your friends and loved ones on air. So whether you are behind bars and reaching out, or are out and reaching in, we welcome you to mail or email us your Valentine's messages. Our email address is kboppc@gmail.com, and our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Address your messages to Prison Pipeline Collective. Then tune in on February 15th at 6:30 p.m. to hear your messages read on air.
The KBOO Community Radio Artist in Residence program assists artists working creatively with sound. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KBOO mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The goals of the KBOO Artist Support Program are to support and invest in individuals who are pushing themselves artistically using sound, whose work will impact the cultural landscape of Portland, and to bring those artists into the dynamic KBOO community of local, national, and international artists and activists. Applications for the 2016 KBOO Artist in Residence are due February 12th at 5 p.m. More information and application materials are at kboo.fm/AIR2016.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Nacho Drum, showing Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. Released in 1993, Nacho Drum is a French documentary about the Romani people's journey from Northwest India to Spain, consisting primarily of music. Again, that's Lacho Drome, Thursday, January 21st, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running through February 8th. Thursday, January 28th, will screen Landfill Harmonic. Landfill Harmonic follows the Recycled Orchestra of Keitora, a Paraguayan musical group that plays instruments made entirely out of garbage. When their story goes viral, the orchestra is suddenly catapulted into the global spotlight. This 2014 film has been described as a testament to the transformative power of music and the resilience of the human spirit. That's January 28th at 7 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:30 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for Prison Pipeline.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
I was about 11 years old. I was kicking it with some older guys.
Good evening, guys. You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO.